My name's Dr. Brendan Kelly, and I have the privilege of serving as president of the University of West Georgia. And I want to welcome you to our podcast, Off the Cuff. We feature conversations with leaders and high performers from all walks of life. There are so many videos, seminars, and books related to leadership and performance. But perhaps the most insight that we're able to gain into those subjects comes from getting into the minds of leaders. Why they've taken certain actions or made certain decisions. How they prepare to win. Conversations with leaders and high performers create tremendous value for me. And I hope that this conversation creates great value for you as well. Today I'm having a conversation with Aaron McWhorter, owner of North Georgia Turf Incorporated and Sports Turf Incorporated. He grew up in Heard County working on a dairy farm and was the son of two school teachers. He is also a two-time graduate of the University of West Georgia, both at the baccalaureate and master's level. He followed college by teaching at Lamar County High School, served as head men's and women's basketball coach before making a pivotal decision to go back and run his family's dairy farm, and then pivoting again to leverage that farm into new businesses and new ways of doing business. Aaron has been a significant community leader and a wonderful and involved alumnus of the University of West Georgia. Today's conversation was recorded in the office of the president on our main campus in Carrollton, Georgia. Aaron McWhorter, it's great to see you. How are you?
Brendan, it's a pleasure to see you. Good to be here.
And we're talking in my office on the day that the University of West Georgia is going to officially sign an agreement with the Atlantic Sun Conference and transition to Division I. I say that on the front end of our conversation because you've been a big part of that. You've been a big supporter of this university for an awfully long time, especially for UWG athletics. How do you feel about that transition?
I think it's a great transition. Like I said, when we started this thing, I wore my blue jacket today because today is the day, you know, that we all celebrate where we're going. Not where we've been, but where we're going. Where we've been has been a great history, but where we're going's a bright future.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I ask that because you've been part of this place for a lot of chapters in its history when it was in its evolution, right? Each chapter building on the next. I'd love to talk about that in terms of your own business. You and your career. You own NG Turf is the kind of the central company, right, in your constellation.
Right.
But that's not where you started. Can you talk about early Aaron? Because you are, as the CEO of a really successful company. We don't all start out as CEOs. Where'd you start and how did you get there?
Well, it's pretty easy to be CEO when you have one employee.
That's right.
And that's where we started in a way. But, of course, I grew up in the Rootville area, south of Carrollton, and went to school at Central Carrollton and came to West Georgia as a freshman and basically made it through to become a educator, coach and a teacher for a short while, and then eventually went back to a family dairy farm that I grew up on almost exactly 51 years ago now. And so from that eventually migrated into a little bit of sod production in the mid-80s. And from that, we have grown a little bit every year in the sod production, as well as we incorporated the usage of sod onto athletic fields and other facilities that we eventually became a general contractor to build. And so we still do both things. We grow a lot of sod and we also do a lot of recreation construction.
Can you talk about some of the sports facilities that you do? I mean, you have a pretty vast portfolio
of helping to manage the evolution of those sports facilities. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we started the sports turf company in 1991 as a separate entity, primarily because we had to separate our insurance policies from the farm to the construction activities. But it has grown. We've been very fortunate. The first major opportunity we had was to do the 96 Olympics softball complex in Columbus. And we built the complex, and then we ran the maintenance side of the field during the Olympics. So that led us to Auburn, which led us to the Falcons, which led us to Alabama, which we've done Ole Miss, Mississippi State. And we do dozens and dozens every year of high school fields. Of course, early in the days, those were all natural. Used to do a lot of natural baseball fields. Don't do as many baseball fields now as we used to, but do a lot of synthetic turf now. And I tell everybody, as a sod producer, if I could make it off limits, I probably would. But it has a place when you have a concentration of activities in a small area. It has a place.
It's fascinating how you've been able to pivot your business. So you go, I'm going to go back if you don't mind. You went back to the dairy farm that you grew up on. Did you start out doing dairy, or did you immediately start moving towards sod?
No, we went back in 72. So from 72 to 85, we were in the dairy business. At one time, we were milking over 350 cows three times a day and had 12 to 15 employees and farming over 1,000 acres of crops and row crops and so forth in the Heard County area.
What made you pivot? I ask that because leaders who really evolve things and elevate things tend to make big decisions at one point or another. Was that a big decision for you all?
No, I'll have to credit good fortune, good luck, that old definition of luck, being prepared when an opportunity comes along has a little bit to do with. But being inquisitive, we had actually shifted out of the dairy business. My father had died. My brother and I decided we wanted to do some other things. So he went back to college, got a degree in computer science, and I took over the farm and was farming with a small, like I said, one person earlier. I literally had one person working for me in the 83, 84, 85 period. And we tell this story a lot, that I was actually selling some wheat straw to a landscaper, and he said, "You need to grow sod." And I said, "What sod?" But I knew what he was talking about once he sort of explained it a little bit. So we did some inquiries, and it looked like an opportunity because we had real estate that had been irrigated on the river where we are now at Weisberg. As they say, that's the story of the Golden Goose. That real estate on the river with the water access is the Golden Goose. And we grew it from 20 acres to something over 3,000 at the moment.
So 83, 84, 85, you have one employee working for you?
Right.
How big's your company now?
Well, if you take the sod operation, it's about 170 people, just the sod side, and then there's another on the construction side, probably 60 or people.
It really is amazing. I say that because we're in service to 13,000 students, and when you're at the one employee stage of your career, sometimes you can't see the 200 plus employee stage as clearly. That's part of the reason why we get a chance to have conversations like this. Can you Can you talk about that growth? Because that's not a lot of time in the grand scheme of things to grow a business by that much.
Well, I was probably 38 or 39 when we started, 38. And you're right, not a lot of time, but it was 38 years ago, 37 years ago. And a little along, we just do continue to do a little along all the time. And looking back at it, it looks like a lot. But if kind of you take it in a little bit along, it just, if you're fortunate and good luck, then it will accumulate over time.
A little along, that's a great phrase. implement in increments. That's often the phrase that we use. You're growing your business between the 80s and the present. You and I have talked before. That was not without challenges, especially in the agricultural business, because you can't control everything in agriculture. Can you shed some light, for those who are less familiar, talk about some of the challenges in agriculture in the state of Georgia, just natural things that you would face when you own a farm. Because, you know, Mother Nature can take over from time to time, correct?
Right, absolutely. you know, we've had floods. We've had one catastrophic flood in 2009. We've had dry weather. We've had cold weather last winter and other times that have done severe damages and whatnot. But it's like a farmer, they say, is totally optimistic. He's got to, you know, be optimistic, but yet he gambles every day. I tell everybody I don't gamble. I don't even buy a lottery ticket because I do that. I do that all the time.
I find that fascinating. There are so many businesses where you get to control many more factors. You can't control Mother Nature. Your 2009 catastrophic flood. What does catastrophic mean in your business? If you don't mind me asking.
The main farm at Weisberg was underwater for a week. Most places, 8 to 10 foot underwater.
Wow.
And destroyed the entire crop for the year on that farm. And I tell everybody, if we had not had farms at Calhoun, Fort Valley, Perry, we would have been out of business because we didn't have anything to sell for nearly 12 months.
Wow.
Off of that real estate. That's kind of very unusual. They call that a 1,000-year flood. And, you know, in Carroll County, we had people who perished during that overnight flood and up along the Douglas County area as well. Very unusual activity. Don't think, you know, we'll be unfortunate enough to have it happen again in my lifetime.
But you pivoted and were able to sustain after that. I'd love to ask, and I ask because one of the things that we try to accomplish in these conversations is giving people insight into the types of decisions that leaders have to make, not necessarily want to make. We all talk about the decisions that leaders want to make, right? Great coaches and... But it's in those moments of distress or moments when opportunity presents itself and there's some risk involved that you have to make some really key decisions that, when you reflect on them, turned out to be everything. I'm curious if you could point out one or two of those, whether it was, you know, during a catastrophe or otherwise.
Well, you know, there are decisions that you make that are things... But I'll take you to this, that I think the decisions that we make about other people, about the people we hire, the people we employ, and how we do that is probably the biggest thing, the most difficult decisions. Selecting the right candidate, keeping the right people in the right positions are the most difficult decisions that I make because it affects me, it affects them, it affects us all in how we act and behave. You know, the question of, okay, do I buy a piece of real estate or not? Yeah, those are big decisions. but they're kind of mechanical in some thought, coming to a realization that, yes, we can do this, we can do it profitably, you know, looking and calculating those equations. They're much clearer, easier decisions than the decisions about people.
You probably don't remember when I first became president, we were together, we were having that exact same conversation.
Yep.
About people and the importance of people in the organization and the balance that, or the series of balances that have to occur there. If you had to describe from a cultural perspective, the culture around people, I've been exposed to so many of your employees. They love working for the company. They feel a sense of ownership and dedication. And we obviously have a lot of employees at the University of West Georgia. Public and private sector are rather different, but we're always shooting for those great outcomes. What do you do as the leader of the company to nurture that over time? Because you have a lot of long tenures of service among employees.
Well, I think having a active person in front of everybody makes a big difference. In other words, they're going to follow the lead that you give them. I still do the things that I did 25 years ago. If it means getting your hands dirty, then I do what's required at the time. Our labor force has changed a lot, but my characteristic activities have not changed substantially in that period of time. I still do pretty much what I've always done. And I try to lead by example, willing to do just about what everybody else is doing or have done.
That's is that unique to a family business? Because you're a family business, right?
I don't think it's unique by no means. No, I don't. I think that showing the willingness to be the leader is important in any business.
That's fantastic. We have the Stone Center for Family Business, Entrepreneurship, and Innovation at UWG, and we hold roundtables with family businesses all the time and talk about the uniquenesses that come along with that. But the dynamic that you just described seems to pour into the conversation all of the time, that there are certain types of leadership attributes that just simply apply to people. How do you empower or what lengths do you go to empower your employees and other leaders inside of the organization to do just that, to lead?
We do leadership training seminars. We do daily conference calls with all of our farm managers. So we're discussing issues from safety to operational things. How do you plant fescue and how do you prepare the ground? And, all those things are, I have a production manager who helps me with that discussion, and we have that discussion every morning early. We 15-minute pep talk. Early in the morning, sometimes more than a pep talk, but
but there's consistency in the way you do business.
Yeah, and we do the same kind of promotional things on an annual basis. Like, y'all are kind enough to help us with a facility here that we have our Christmas party, and we'll have 300 to 400 people at the Christmas party. It's interesting. We've always done it when it was 20 people, and now it's 300 or 400. And we have people in the office. Actually, my daughter runs the show, Natalie, and she gets a plan. She gets a wish list from all the kids and sometimes grandkids, all the wives. Everybody gets something and the all the children get a gift from Santa Claus. Santa Claus is there, and they get to pick out what they want, and we actually literally shop for that individual situation.
Wow.
And wrap all those presents individually. All the employees get their annual bonuses, and we have dinner and do some awards of games and other things.
I mean, what you're describing is unique. I hope you know that is that's so special, and you're right. It's our honor to be the site of that gathering each year. But that is my family had. We were in family businesses for years and years and years, for 50 years, for my parents before they sold their last companies and retired. That's a pretty special attribute, bringing people together like that. To what degree does that enhance, from your perspective, their dedication to the company, that type of once-a-year event?
I'm not sure that I could put a degree of enhancement that we get out of that. I think it is part of that setting a precedent that we do from a leadership point of view, that this is a big family, not just a real kin family, although we have several family members who are active, but that it's a much bigger family, that we're trying to spread that thought process that we're all in this thing together. And I think we get some good results out of it.
And to what degree did you instill that spirit of entrepreneurship across your own family? Because that's tough for a lot of family businesses.
It is. And then you get into all kinds of family personalities and being the patriarch, if you will, of the family, it makes it very challenging at times. But we've been blessed, to be able to keep family members in the business and successfully. Part of that's being able to grow. Mm-hmm. And same thing's true for employees. You know, when there's opportunity for them to advance as the company advances, then I think that is something that helps everybody focus on where we're going.
One of the, I mentioned the Stone Center. We have so many students at UWG, and I blame Shark Tank in many ways, in good ways. But you have a generation of young people now who are coming up and owning their own companies is a pretty standard ambition among many, many students. If you had to give advice to, I'm a person who's, 20 years old, I've got an idea, but that's what it is right now. From an entrepreneurial perspective, what advice do you give to a young person who wants to go and chase their dreams?
Read everything you can read. Hmm. Know everything you can know. What you don't know will hurt you. Look at everything as much as you possibly can. Digest it all. Then make your best shot at where you want to go.
So when you said what you don't know will hurt you, what do you mean?
I'll give you a great example. 40 years ago, I could have bought real estate, leased it to a timber company for 30 years, and they would have paid for it for nothing. I didn't know that was going on. I missed that opportunity entirely, almost entirely. I got the last end of it when I finally found out about it. What you don't know will hurt you in a lot of other ways. That just makes common sense. If you don't know what the rules of the road are, you can get hurt out there on the road, and there's thousands of examples.
And there's no way to know unless you're constantly studying.
No, you never know it all.
Yeah.
But you want to absorb as much as you can.
Yeah, but I think I love that point of view because we say all the time when you come to a university, it's not about the knowledge, it's about understanding how to think and continually study and continually learn. And, you know, people talk about that in generalities and kind of, well, I don't know exactly what that means. You are a living example of exactly what that means. Because tax codes are constantly changing, environment's constantly changing, the business world is constantly changing. And if you're not studying, you will be left behind.
You will be left behind. And, you know, my undergraduate degree here is in history and political science. And of course, we went on and when I was teaching school and on school board, I got my master's degree in school administration. But I promised them I would never teach school again.
Now you apply those skills and abilities differently. Exactly. I love that. One of the key pieces that we focus on in this conversation, and gosh, you've done such a good job of it, is trying to equip young leaders with advice. You gave some great advice, if you know, from that entrepreneurial perspective, and I think that applies across people's lives. But given all of the leadership experience you have, both in your business and outside of it, and that's substantial because I know we haven't concentrated on it, but you have a lot of community leadership. I mean, you just mentioned the school board. I'm a little curious, what drove you to the public side of your service, contributing to the community rather than just business?
I grew up in a family that was important. Being involved in making decisions that affected the community was important. Even in rural Heard County when I was growing up, you know, who's going to maintain the roads? You know, what are the taxes going to be? Those basic decisions that most people are interested in right now even. You know, the same basic things were always true. And I like to have an opportunity to be involved in those decision-making processes.
That's a... But you did it for the salary of $0 because it's public service, right?
Right. You don't get paid much.
You don't get paid much. I love the fact that you're trying to instill the value, though, of get involved in your community. You would, I suspect, encourage young people to do the same. Start early. Get involved in your community.
I would, man. I never liked somebody else knowing a lot more than I did about what was going on. You know, I like to know what's going on from a very early age, even in high school. You know, we were having discussions about government affairs and whatnot, and always interested in knowing what was going on and being involved. And some people never did care too much for all those things, but that's always been a part of me. But I think, you know, the environment I was growing up in had a big part of that.
Yeah, I ask because those examples play really key roles in our lives when we demonstrate that type of involvement. You have been you've been involved in the University of West Georgia for a long time in a wide variety of different ways. That's another form of community service. Why?
Well, I think West Georgia is a very important part of the community here. Supporting the university is like supporting the community, and vice versa. It's we're very closely tied together, so I think it's important.
I love that, and I'm grateful for that. Well, let me ask you a final question. We've got an awful lot of students who listen to this podcast. You are what many of them are trying to become. You're a community leader. You are one of the most prominent alumni of the University of West Georgia. You are really successful in business in a multitude of ways. And I think your holiday gathering that you described is probably the best example of that, because all of your employees and their families come together so that you get to celebrate this thing that you're all part of. There's so much to say about that life and the result of all of your efforts. So if you have to give advice to young people who are trying to become that, reflecting on your own road to get there, what do you tell them?
Well, I think we talked about that.
We did.
In other words, I did. You know everything you can know. And then be lucky. There's some luck in everything. You know, we all are fortunate. I got an opportunity to speak to some business classes out here, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago one day. And I made a list of the 10 things I thought were critical to run your own business. That was the subject matter. Well, you know, what's critical to run your own business? And after much consideration, I came to the opinion that the number one thing was that you're healthy. And because you cannot run your own business, you can't be successful unless you are healthy. So look at your health situation. Be careful what you're doing. That's the first thing before. And be lucky. Be a little lucky from time to time. Be driven, but be lucky.
And luck is being prepared when opportunity emerges.
I totally agree.
I've asked that question to a number of people. Nobody's ever said, focus on your health. We are one of five universities in the country that has a chief wellness officer, because I strongly believe we have to teach college students how to eat right, get enough sleep, and have really healthy adult relationships. That's such a powerful piece of advice, because you can control a lot of that.
You can control a lot of that. There's some luck involved. You know, you don't have an accident. You don't have, these things that happen, diseases and so forth and all. But I've been very fortunate that I went over 30 years and never missed a day of work.
Wow.
That was a blessing.
Wow. That's fantastic. Aaron, you are spectacular. And congratulations on a life really well lived. I'm really glad we got to share this.
Let's hope it's not over.
No, it's not. No, but we want to, let's mark it while it's here. You're fantastic. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank y'all.